Me.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this,
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is your moment, your time to shine, your comeback. You're ready for the next step in your career, and you want an education employers respect. So you're not just going back to school. You're coming back with Purdue Global. Backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected public universities, Purdue Global is built for people who bring their life experience into the online classroom. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
We're all looking for ways to save, especially on medical bills. But where do you start? Unless you're a medical billing expert, finding savings can seem impossible. HealthLock can help. HealthLock is a healthcare technology company that securely connects with your insurance and flags errors like overbilling, wrong codes, and fraud. You can even have HealthLock work on your behalf to get money back from select past bills. Saving starts with knowing where to look. Visit HealthLock.com today before you see another healthcare provider.
Good morning, peeps, and welcome to Woke AF Daily with me, your girl, Danielle Moody, recording from the home bunker. Folks, I am very excited about today's episode. It is with a friend of the show that I'm excited to bring back and introduce new book, Black Women Taught Us, An Intimate History of Black Feminism by Dr. Jen M. Jackson. And in this conversation, Jen and I get into, you know, the history of Black women, of Black influence, of the racism and misogynoir that we have seen as of late in the media, and just talk about the importance of books like theirs that really goes far in terms of lifting up the illuminating figures within Black feminism that have shaped this country. We talk about the difference, right, between, quote, feminism and Black feminism. We dig into the Black liberation movement and discuss the real importance of understanding the nuances that have always been at play, the tightrope that Black women have always had to walk in our society and continue to do so. And, you know, I always enjoy any time that I get the opportunity to speak with Jen, because they bring this country its racism, its misogyny, its transphobia, its homophobia to task all the time. And I deeply appreciate it. So I hope that you all enjoy the conversation with Dr. M. Jackson on their new book, Black Women Taught Us, An Intimate History of Black Feminism. It is out now. Folks, I am very excited to welcome back to Woke AF Daily. It's been a long time, actually.
Yeah.
Right? It's been a long time. Dr. Jen M. Jackson, who is an assistant professor at Syracuse University in the Department of Political Science and the new author, I want to just give a round of applause, new author of the book Black Women Taught Us, which is a portrait of, I think, Black women who some we know, some we don't know, at a time, Jen, where I think that in so many ways, we are seeing Black women in all of these different positions, whether you're looking at Fannie Willis in Georgia, you're looking at Tish James, you're looking at, you know, Angel Reese, you're looking at all of these different Black women that are in the spotlight, and we're watching the way that a lot has changed and a lot hasn't in terms of what we see, expect, mm-hmm. want, and demand from Black women. So talk to us about this book, and just loving the title, love the cover, Black Women Taught Us. Tell us about it and the why behind it for you.
Thank you so much for that background and introduction. I can't take very much credit for the cover, except that I did indicate to the team at Penguin that I wanted a Black woman designer to be behind the design. So this is from her name is Zia Gordon, and she's on Instagram as Careful Black Girl, and girl spelled GRL. She's an incredible designer and very attentive to guidance. So this book, you know, is so important to me because when I conceived of writing it, I was it was just before COVID-19 started to spike in 2020. And I was coming out of graduate school and I was thinking, you know, what book do I even have in me to write? And, you know, this was the time when so many books were really being written to white women about Black folk. I just didn't want to participate in that process. So this book is actually based on a course that I teach at Syracuse University to young people, to undergrads and graduate students. And it's a kind of archive and anthology of my own Black feminist journey and all the bumps along the way, the self-discovery, the process of understanding my own queerness, and how Black feminist literature and their lives taught me so much about that, right? So I start the book off actually not talking about any of the women on the cover. I start the book off talking about my mother. And it starts off at a choir rehearsal that took place in my house every Wednesday. My mom is a singer and all my aunts are singers and very religious people. So it was gospel music. And they always came on Wednesdays and had these choir rehearsals. And this was my time to spend all this, you know, additional time with older women, older Black women who saw me and wanted to participate in the process of raising me, of ensuring my survival. And I tell about my Auntie Barbara, who taught me how to make sure the chicken was cooked all the way through. She was like, okay, baby, that chicken is bleeding. You got to poke it with a fork, you know? And these little lessons I got from my Auntie Donna Faye, who never wanted me to go outside without earrings on, you know? So like these things, and these women were not actually blood relatives. You know, they were what we call fictive kin, you know? So this book is really an ode to as much to the Audre Lordes and the Toni Morrisons and the Ida B. Wells as they are to the Auntie Donna Fays, the Auntie Barbaras, and my mother, Cynthia, and my grandmother, Lucille, and my grandmother, Clara, right? This book is meant to be a sequence of love stories, of love letters to the women who were invested in my futurity, who were invested in seeing me survive. And I think that's inherently what Black feminism is about, right? About ensuring Black folks' survival. And unfortunately, Black women have had to do that work for so long, and they've done it mostly thankless, right? And so this book is also to say thank you for your work that is too often overlooked.
Tell us why there is, I guess, an important distinction between Black feminist ideology and white feminism. Why that distinction and the literature and the ideology is so distinctly different and needs to be taught and expressed in that way?
Yeah. So this is an important question because a lot of people don't understand that feminism, you know, mainstream feminism started at the same time as Black feminism really got its start. People think that Black feminism is kind of new. But in actuality, the first wave of what we call now mainstream white feminism started with white women who in the 19th and 20th centuries were thinking about their relationship to their husbands. They were thinking about the fact that they would say they felt owned by their husbands. Meanwhile, those same women owned Black women, right? And they weren't thinking about the fact that as they were thinking of womanhood and of feminism and of their own rights, they weren't thinking about the rights of the women who were working in their households, right? And so mainstream white feminism, that first wave, the Simone de Beauvoirs of the world, the Mary Wollstonecrafts of the world, were not thinking about race at all. They were just thinking about their orientation to white men, right? So what happens here is that what people overlook is that people like Anna Julia Cooper were writing in 1892 books like A Voice from the South. And A Voice from the South is really thinking about what it means to be a Black woman in Black churches in the South where they're facing lynching. It's the post-slavery moment, the post-emancipation moment. What does it mean to be free now, right? Ida B. Wells writes Southern Horrors in 1892 as well. So at the same time that white women are thinking about being owned by white men, Black women are thinking about what it means to be oppressed by everyone else. Right. And so feminism ends up being associated with those white women. That first wave is that kind of moment of their self-realization that we don't belong to these men. The second wave actually emerges during the civil rights era, which is kind of funny because Black women are obviously thinking about race once again. But white women are thinking about labor. They're thinking about what it means to work outside the home, right? They have now been faced with the Great Depression. They're now faced with men who are having to leave for multiple wars. And they're thinking about what it means to use their labor to help promote the household. What does it mean to be a respectable wife who, you know, has meatloaf waiting on the stove when everybody gets home, but now you need two incomes maybe to keep that household going, right? Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, Black women are trying to survive and get the right to vote. In 1920, we know that women got the right to vote codified in the 19th Amendment. But what we rarely talk about is that it took until the Voting Rights Act in 1965 for Black folks to actually have the legitimate right to vote, right? To tear down all of these kind of grandfather clauses and various laws that kept them from the polls. So what you see here is another dissonance between what white women's concerns are and the lived experiences of Black women. And as the third wave emerges in the 70s and 80s, white women are thinking about reproduction, their bodily justice, what it means to live freely in their skin. They're taking off their bras, they're burning bras and things like this. But this is the Black power moment. Right. This is when Black women all over the country are trying to figure out what it means for us to have rights against a carceral state. This is at the same time that the war on drugs is increasing. And there's a huge epidemic across the North of the AIDS and HIV crisis. Right. And so Black women are thinking, what does it mean for us to live in community with folks who are not thinking about our concerns? Right. So there's always been this disconnect between white women's kind of mainstream feminist concerns and the lived experiences of Black women, right? So Black feminism has endured all this time, right? People, for some reason, associated with the coining of intersectionality in 1989 and 1991. But in actuality, intersectionality was a concept before it was a theoretical term, right? People were thinking, Anna Julia Cooper was thinking about intersectionality when she wrote A Voice from the South. Ida B. Wells wrote in Southern Horrors about the ways that little Black girls were sexually assaulted, but there was no punishment for their aggressors because they were both Black and girl, right? So she was already thinking about those intersections of identity. So all this time, we have been having a kind of intersectional feminist conversation in Black feminist circles. It's just been overlooked by the mainstream movement. And unfortunately, that is part and parcel with mainstream white feminism, that it typically just associates itself with the concerns of white women trying to be more like or closer to white men, but not really being in coalition with and in solidarity with Black women.
Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this, I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter, that's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered for just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it, your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of, a degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/news. That's LifeLock.com/news to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
Jen, let me ask you this too. Thank you for that, because I mean, it's like you just gave us a brief insight into what I would imagine a 101 and a 102 class would be like taught by you. Tell me where you see or where you have found Black queerness inside of Black feminism, and how you articulate that inside of your book, how you have articulated that inside of the teachings and the learnings, right, that you both provide and have experienced through your life.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting because I always say I've always been a young, like, Black queer girl from Oakland, right? I think my mother very much clocked me as a child, right? She would put me in stockings and dresses and all these kind of girly things. And I was repelled by it. I was 6'4" by the time I was 12 years old, and I played sports, and I always leaned masculine. So I was a very gender queer teenager. My favorite shoe was Jordans. To my sixth grade graduation, I wore stockings, a leather vest, a collared white shirt, a black skirt with slits at the side, and combat boots, you know? So it was always,
yes.
You know, like, and I was class president. So I walked on stage and gave a speech in that outfit. You know, I've always been this person, you know, I've always been this queer girl. And I was so blessed and so lucky that my mother, who was not tall, I'm the only tall woman in my family. And they were all kind of like, we don't know what to do with you up there, right? But my mother and my grandmothers were very adamant about me loving myself and me being fully in my body and being proud of who I am and who I was. And so my mom would always say, like, you keep your head up. You never look down. You never hunch your shoulders. You never shrink for people. You know, your body, you stand upright in your skin. And even when I felt small on the inside, or when I was hiding my gender and sexuality, when I was hiding my desires, because in a religious family, I couldn't say, hey, I like girls, right? It was hard to express that. And it slipped out from time to time. When I was 11, I combed my hair up into a high top fade, and I walked into my mom's bedroom. I said, Mom, I'm a boy. And she said, girl, if you don't get out my bedroom, I am watching a movie. I'm not, you know, and you know, and we never talked about it again, but it was one of those, she wasn't upset with me. She was just like, don't interrupt my movie, you know? And I think in a lot of respects, my mother allowing me to explore myself, you know, as I wished, was how my queerness showed up, you know. And that's how it shows up in the book, right? So in the book, I talk a lot about these moments where I was discovering, and this is going to sound weird. I'm just going to say it. I didn't actually really understand that I was gay until I was much, much older. And when I say much, much older, I mean like in my 30s. Mainly because in Oakland, like everyone's like a little bit gay, right? So like Oakland is a very queer place. Berkeley is a very queer place. It's a place where there's a lot of hippies, right? And I felt like we were all doing a little bit of queer shit. I was like, all y'all like girls.
Right.
Everybody likes everybody. So, you know, so for me, growing up in California, in Oakland and Berkeley in the Bay Area in the 80s and 90s, being genderqueer wasn't weird. We had a cross-dressing day at my high school. And it was my favorite theme day. It was my favorite theme day. I dressed like a boy. I painted on a mustache. I got all my, and the girls flirted with me all day. I was like, this is amazing. It was my favorite day. And no one thought it was weird that we all would cross-dress. The boys would do it. Everyone would cross-dress. And as I got older, I realized, oh, that's very progressive, right? That's, even the teachers would do it. I had a French teacher. He was a teacher in biology, but he was a French man, and he had a full hairy chest, and he would come to school in lingerie, women's lingerie, you know, and he would just walk around all day in women's lingerie, you know, and we were like, this is fine, Mr. LaCourte, you wear your lingerie. And this was a big man, okay, my size and buff. So, you know, these things, I think, made queerness so natural to me that it didn't stand out until I left home, right? When I left home and people were like, why are you like that? Like what's, and I was like, what do you mean? And it started to cast a light on the queer ways of being that had already been acceptable and kind of just who I was. And that was when I turned to Black feminism to be like, why does everyone think I'm so weird? Like, why am I having such a hard time fitting in these spaces?
Right.
And that's the crooked room that Melissa Harris Perry talks about. And I talk about in the introduction chapter where we're walking around, right? And we're trying to fit in this space and we think we're off, right? But in actuality, the room is crooked.
It's the room.
The room is asking us to behave in certain ways, right? That are not natural to our bodies. And so we're trying to stand upright. We're trying to fit. And we can't, the room is just not the room we should be in, right? And it took me years and years and years to realize that in this queer body, I needed to just stand upright and walk out of that room. And for so long, I was trying to fit myself. And so this book is really also a kind of coming of age story of me walking through that journey and understanding I don't have to fit myself into those rooms.
I think the beauty of this book, but also of your own intertwining story, is like the courage that it takes to say, as Black women, as Black people, this room ain't right. It's not me, right? And I'm going to walk out of it, right? And I'm going to walk into and create something else, right? Because I think that it has always been that the one size fits all mentality of this country, right? Which is that everybody that comes here or is brought here, is forced here, is forced to assimilate into some watered down, meek, small, you know, docile version of who they actually are. And I think that, you know, what your book, as you say, your love letter, you know, Black women taught us is like, no, you can leave that room. That room isn't for that room isn't for you. And I love that.
Me. Focus Features presents Back to Black.
I want people to hear my voice and just forget their troubles.
Experience the music and her story.
Know this.
I ain't no Spice Girl.
Like never before.
That's my daughter. That's my Amy.
On the big screen.
I want to be remembered. For just being me.
Amy Winehouse, Back to Black, directed by Sam Taylor Johnson. Rated R, under 17, not a minute without parent. Only in theaters May 17th.
This is it. Your moment. This is your time to make your comeback with Purdue Global. When you come back with a Purdue Global degree, you create opportunity for yourself, your family, and your future. It's a degree you can be proud of.
degree that employers will trust and respect. Purdue Global offers working adults like you over 175 flexible degree programs to meet your specific career goals. These include associate, bachelor's, master's, and doctoral degrees and certificates. Purdue Global degree programs range from nursing to business to communication and more. Whatever your interest, we have the degree that will move you forward. You have the knowledge. You have the experience. Now it's time to get credit for the work you've done and earn the recognition you deserve with Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. You know you're worth it. We do too. So don't wait another second to get the degree that will take your career to the next level. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
Like many of us, you might think identity theft will never happen to you. But consider this. There's a new identity theft victim every 3 seconds in the U.S. That's over 15 million people by the end of this year, equal to the populations of New York, Los Angeles, and Chicago combined. Even worse, identity theft victims often don't even know they're victims. That's why LifeLock Identity Theft Protection alerts you to identity threats, even the ones that don't show up on a credit report, like data breaches, fraudulent bank transactions, loan and credit card applications, and crimes committed in your name. If your identity is stolen, your own dedicated LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will work to fix it. LifeLock protects you in ways that you simply can't on your own. Join now and save up to 25% your first year at LifeLock.com/iHeart. That's LifeLock.com/iHeart to save up to 25%. Identity theft protection starts here.
With a few minutes that we have left, I want to talk about what we have seen recently in culture come across our screens with, most recently, I want to talk about Amanda Seales first, a comedian, actress, mm-hmm. who was it like a couple of weeks ago, op-ed written about her and the fact that she is not palpable in some Black spaces and for some Black people. I mean, I don't know what else to say. I don't know what other word to use, but she has called out the Black establishment, whether it's in media and Hollywood and this or that, has a very acidic, this is coming from me, who says a lot of hot shit, but has a very acidic tongue when talking about Black people experience this, is that, and the other thing. And Jen, people are coming for her. They are coming for her to the point where I just saw on social media Dr. Mark Lamont Hill coming out and saying, you know, I the media, a pylon that is happening around Amanda Seales is not right. And like, you know, I support her, blah, blah. Make it make sense about what is happening in this universe.
So you know what? You know what? This is the thing. I made a post about this on Instagram and people were upset because there is, okay, so there's two parts to this, which I think that people have to understand. We don't have to choose sides, right? There are the people who say, we should love one another. We should offer grace to Black women. This is, you know, the original piece was in Essence. And they're like, this is a publication that's meant to uplift Black women. How could you all write this? So I understand that, right? There's the other side, which is kind of where I started off, which is like, yeah, but people don't like her, right? And that's okay, right? We don't have to like everyone, right? There are plenty of people in academia, in publishing, in entertainment, who I don't personally like, right? And that don't personally like me. And that's okay, right? And that was kind of where my stance was. Now I'm at a different place. And I'm in a place because I watched a video of hers on Twitter where she was like yelling, like, this is enough. Enough is enough. I don't know you people. And what I honestly want to say about this is that grace is so important. And accountability is just as important, right? And if people over the years have come to you and said, we really don't appreciate how you talk about poor Black folks and these Nikes and Jordan suits, tracksuits or whatever, and passports. We really didn't enjoy when you were defending Sean King. We really felt a way when you were saying that Charlamagne is your friend. And these things hurt us because we like you and we want better for you, right? That, but people don't understand is that that is love, right? Because if people don't call you in, if people don't say anything to you at all, that means they couldn't care less what you do or say. It's like you walk outside with a booger in your nose and your friend lets you get into a room of people with a booger hanging out your nose or spinach in your teeth, right? That's not your friend, right? But we have been a friend to Amanda and we have said, we don't like these things and we expect more of you. You only expect more of people who you believe have the capacity to do better. And unfortunately, each time that folks have come to Amanda and said, hey, we really want you to do better, Amanda has said, I don't care what y'all think. Okay.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
she doubles down. She will go and do an interview about it and triple down. She'll never apologize. I don't think I've actually even heard her say, I'm sorry for saying these things that might've hurt poor Black folk or whatever it might be. She does not hold herself accountable. Right. And it's not clear who she is accountable to. Right. So the work, the people always talk about, I love Black people and I love Black people and I love Black people. But if you love someone, you have to be accountable to them. It, love without accountability is abuse. That's all it is. Bell Hooks taught us this, okay? Love with no accountability is a form of abuse. And unfortunately, a lot of people who have promoted her, been behind her, followed her, told everyone about her, thought she was great, now feel disrespected, disposed of, and abused by her. And I can't count myself in that because I released her quite some time ago when she was doing the whole anti-Black passport thing. That's a line for me. I came from a place where that's the trigger for me. Also, Jordans is my favorite shoe and I'm never going to stop buying them. I didn't get a passport until I was 32 years old, but I had about over two dozen pairs of Jordans before then. You know why? Because I needed to have shoes on my feet, right? This is the language of people who use welfare policy to ensure that folks don't have enough food to feed themselves. It's the same language. Right. It's the same dog whistle.
Right.
And so when people call her in, she has to be able to listen and to hold that calling in and to be accountable to them. Because if she's not accountable, this will continue happening. This is how it works, right? And I can say this again, like you said, you say some hot shit, I say some hot shit, right? But if somebody comes to me and say, Jen, that was a miss, I'm going to listen. There's some things I say what I said, right? If it's reasoned, right? But if it hurts Black folk, absolutely not. I have a duty, in my opinion, to stand in the gap for all Black people, no matter where they come from, no matter who they are. And that is something that is at the center of my work. And it's just not clear to a lot of people who is at the center of Amanda's work at this point.
Thank you for that. You were one of the first people that I text, you know, when the Essence story broke, because I had seen your post and I was just like, you know, because I'm a person who will also like hold myself to account. Did I go too far? Did I say too much? Like, is this the truth? Like all of those things, like, as a person with a public platform, you know, there is accountability and responsibility that comes with that. And I'm just like, oh, am I treating her too harshly? Am I criticizing her too much? Right? Because pop culture is not my lane. But when I see people who are in Hollywood then move into political spaces, but then do so with a white supremacist tint in their lens and language, then like I do feel that is the space for me to say, you know, like, who is this for? Like, who is your audience? And like, what is the center and what is the purpose that you are moving from? The space that you are moving from?
That's right.
Is it of purpose outside of yourself? And so I think that those distinctions are really important. And so I thank you for breaking that down. I am so excited for you. I am so excited for this book. Folks, it is out now. Black Women Taught Us. Go get it. Buy it for yourself. Buy it for a friend. you know, it is beautiful. It is brilliant. And I just, I thank you so much for making the time for us here at Woke AF and on your tour de force. I appreciate it.
Child, anytime, anytime for you. I love it here.
That is it for me today, dear friends, on Woke AF, as always. Power to the people, and to all the people power. Get woke and stay woke as fuck.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.
We went from normal life, healthy child to acute lymphoblastic leukemia or B-cell ALL. The St. Jude team came up to get CJ via ambulance. Shortly after that, I noticed a rainbow. It meant that there was hope. We were driving into hope. To have hope is to have your child healthy, and we have that because of St. Jude.
You can help kids fight childhood cancer. Please become a St. Jude Partner in Hope today by visiting musicgives.org.
I'm late for a very important date.
Time is running out to score adult theme park tickets at child prices from Undercover Tourist. This summer, make your Walt Disney World vacation more affordable than ever. Escape into a place where magic has the power to transport you into stunning worlds and your favorite stories for less. Buy from Undercover Tourist, an authorized seller, and link to official Walt Disney World apps so you can add on Genie Plus and Lightning Lane upgrades easy. Book your adult theme park tickets at child prices with Undercover Tourist now and save. UndercoverTourist.com.